Guys, this podcast is going to get full on. It's some of the most graphic adult content that we've ever looked at. There'll be broken penises, there'll be lost items in buttholes, and there's going to be a trip to the emergency ward. So if you're not into it, well, consider yourself warned.
Triple J's The Hookup Podcast with Hannah Riley.
Boning can be at times a clumsy, dangerous activity. Things can go wrong between consenting adults. We're talking about sex-related accidents, a.k.a. sexidents, bangtastrophes, jizzaps. For me personally, the sexident that I've encountered the most is falling out of bed. Both of you in this kind of naked tumbleweed tangle of limbs crashing to the floor. Hopefully when it happens to you, if it hasn't already happened yet, which it will, you'll be doing it with someone who is relaxed with you enough to be able to laugh it off. Because that silent, naked climb back into the bed is pretty much the most mortifying moment you could ever share with another human. We put the call out for your sexident stories and found that even mums can get involved.
Well, I was a young pup in my mid-20s. I had a long-term girlfriend at that point. So we were having intercourse and I felt like a bit of pain, but it was masked with the sort of excitement of having sex. Because I heard a gurgling noise, like a plunger coming out of a toilet. And I reached down and I'd known what periods look like. So I asked, is this the time? And she was like, no, that's not me. Turned the lights on and it was a crime scene. Like there was so much blood. It was a puddle, and I realized I had snapped my banjo string. The piece of skin that attaches the foreskin to the head of the penis, and as much as we could, we stopped the bleeding and rushed to hospital, where I had to wait in the emergency with my hand down my pants. The nurses found it quite funny, though. The miraculous part of the story is when I got home, my mum, with the utmost discretion and professionalism, just cleaned everything. The mattress protector, the sheets, the doona, everything.
Here to share his tales of sexual mishaps is comedian Joel Creasy. Thank you so much for joining The Hookup.
Hello. I don't have many vagina accident stories, though. I'm
sorry. That completely shocks me. Right? Now, what's been your history specifically of sexual mishaps?
Oh, I mean, just so many. I was enjoying the company of several other gentlemen, and and I was leaning over the bed to grab something. Who knows what? Possibly a condom, and was like grabbing it, but I had to kind of like tug at something, and I pulled too hard. And, well, hello, and pulled like too hard, and I think maybe I was like tugging a sheet. I'm not sure, and
making the bed with 10 other people in it.
I know. I just want to keep it nice and clean. And elbow shot straight back and hit the guy behind me in the nose. And he immediately got a blood nose and ran out. Like, he was furious as well because he was like a model or something.
Oh, no.
And I ruined his portfolio.
Oh, he's got it insured, I'm sure, if he's, you know, worth his salt. That's amazing. So I can imagine those kind of like group menage or whatever situations are very much prone to sexidents.
Well, absolutely, especially when it's all men because, you know, that's just hilarious, a whole bunch of men in one bed. You know, there's a lot of people and arms and muscles and moving around. There's always accidents. There's always, you know, you're always like someone's like on top of you and there's nothing less sexy when you're having sex than going, ow, get off.
You're squashing me.
You're squashing me. Ow, stop it. I've definitely said that.
Now, Maddie, thanks so much for calling The Hookup. We just heard from Serge earlier who broke what is known as a banjo string. Oof. Now, Maddie, what's your experience with this? You tried to show off some new sex moves to an ex?
Yes, I did. So I was going out to drinks with a past lover, someone who had been very early in the scene for me. And, you know, I think early on in your sex life, you're less likely to feel good about yourself and, you know, kind of get on top and have a great old time.
Yeah, you're
and
novice, so, right?
Exactly. And so I'd kind of, you know, we'd been pretty missionary in our time. Mm-hmm. And nice. So here I am, a couple of drinks down, you know, wanting to show him what he's missed out on.
Yeah.
Go home to my place and I jump on top, ready to have a great old time. And
right.
Yeah, it's It's going wonderfully, I think. And all of a sudden, he is yelling, not in ecstasy, but in pain.
Oh, God.
And we are scrambling around, turning on the light to see, yep, the pool of blood. And I believe the comment was, you broke my heart, you broke my penis.
Oh. Wow.
Rushing.
Wait, so this was from him being like, you broke my heart and my penis?
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. Now, I'm joined by comedian Joel Creasy, as well as Dr. John. He has over 10 years' experience in the emergency department and currently works overnights running the ER of a major Melbourne hospital. Dr. John, thanks so much for joining the hookup.
Not a problem.
What sort of sex accident injuries do you get in the ER?
So in terms of just pure statistics, I think the what we'd call musculoskeletal injuries are still going to be the most common.
Well, slow down, docs. Slow down. Musculoskeletal.
So musculoskeletal meaning sort of like, yeah, literally just falling out of bed, you know, spraining something, breaking mm-hmm. something,
so
those kind of
just
things.
Popping a hip.
Yeah, that kind of thing, you know, back strain, that sort of stuff. But in terms of the ones that actually make it to us, usually it's because, yeah, most people won't actually admit that, you know, they were having sex when, you know, they've hurt themselves or sprained mm-hmm. their ankle or whatever. They'll make some other excuse. So we don't really know. But the ones that actually do make it to us are usually, yeah, where, you know, you've got something stuck up a bum, usually.
Because, right.
Those sort of things, they usually can't get them out themselves. So they come to us to give us a bit, you know.
What sort of objects are we talking?
It never ceases to amaze me what people think to put up one's bum. But, it ranges anything from, you know, okay, yeah, I kind of get, you know, dildo vibrators. Okay,
yeah,
that makes
made
sense.
For it.
It's
yeah.
made for it. It's, yeah. That's cool. And then you go, okay, yeah, if you're going a little bit more creative, you look at a cucumber, you look at a banana. Uh-huh. Okay, fine. It's
and
still
if you're
the
on
same
a health
shape
kick as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Got to keep it clean. But then people start to go a little bit further with things like, you know, squashes, jam jars, banana
whoa,
pumpkins,
whoa, whoa.
Capsicums.
Did you say jam jar?
Jam jars.
Yeah. Eggs. Electric toothbrushes. Soap bars, bottles.
Is the egg thing maybe some sort of like chicken fetish thing going
yeah.
on? Well, that's not really your job
personally.
To ask, is it?
The tip apparently with that is that you need to make sure you boil your egg before you...
Okay. Everyone listening,
yeah.
boil Note those eggs, guys.
Boil your eggs. No, actually, just don't put eggs up there.
Now, Dr. John, I obviously you are a professional, but have there been any instances where you've just found it really hard to keep a straight face?
Pretty much all of them. it's one of those sort of things that, especially when it's something that you just really don't expect or you haven't heard of before. And it's it can often, yeah, surprise you quite a bit as to, you know, what they've decided to put up there and how big it actually is when you actually ask them, okay, just how big this is, you know, like
wow.
Probably some of the biggest things would have been, let's see, there was a 12-inch by 5-inch candle, which was apparently flesh-coloured. Apparently the colour made a difference. To, you
firstly,
know.
Yeah, I didn't even know they made candles that big.
Yeah.
I wonder what scent it was. Surely. Ylang, ylang.
Something relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
There was a spate of Rexona cans Rexona and Impulse cans were quite common at one stage. Apples, which is quite bizarre.
Apples.
Like when you look at the banana, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But apple, I don't quite get that.
The apple of my eye.
One eye.
Literally, yeah.
So are people straightforward with how these things got there? Like I fell into an apple tree.
Yeah, look, it's about a 60-40 mix. So you'll get 60%, which are pretty upfront with what's going on, and then 40% will come in and say, you know, yeah, make up some sort of excuse. And
they slipped and fell on an apple.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, like, yeah, naked in the shower and I was eating an apple when I slipped. And it's like, yeah, uh-huh, okay.
Sure, mm-hmm. yeah.
Can you remember any real clangers off the top of your head?
The shower one is a really, really common one.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of people. There was a couple of there was one guy who came in 2 weekends in a row with. Well, no, sorry, it was one weekend, and he had a Coke bottle, and yeah, he was drinking Coke in the shower, and he slept like okay, whatever. Next week, there was a vacuum cleaner attached to his penis, and and it was like you were vacuuming in the shower when you slept. No,
I should say, look, there's nothing wrong with putting things up your butt. You just have to know how to do it safely.
That's
and
right. Yeah.
if you do need to go into the ER, how should you expect to be treated by healthcare professionals when you get there?
Well, it's not so much about how you should expect. It's more sort of, you know, if you guys are, if the patient's up front with what's going on, it helps us to, you know, manage it safely and, you know, get whatever it is out and treat them most effectively. If they're sort of beating around the bush a bit, no pun intended, and they're not actually sort of up front with what's actually going on, it makes it a lot harder for us and actually can be potentially dangerous for the patient themselves. So,
yeah.
So if I accidentally lodge a pineapple up my butt, I should just come in and go, look, I was getting kinky with this pineapple. I have a bit of a SpongeBob SquarePants thing going on.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, we prefer that you're up front. Yeah, okay, it just makes it easier. Yeah,
I'm just writing that down.
Please don't come in with a pineapple up my butt.
Gotten some great responses from you on the text line. I was play fighting with my boyfriend after sex and he accidentally kneed me in the vagina.
It
swelled up to 3 times the size and it looked like Bear Grylls' face after he was stung by all the bees.
Wow. Descriptive too. I appreciate that.
Now, what are some ways that people can avoid these kind of sex hap, you know, injuries?
So basically I've sort of got a little list of rules, I guess, I've kind of put together. Number one, whatever you put up there, avoid glass. Glass breaks. End of story, end of rectum. It's just not a good scenario with glass.
People are very brave with glass. I don't know why they do that.
They are. And you can actually get glass dildos and stuff as well, which I think is just a totally bad idea.
It's insane. Yeah.
But anyway, so avoid glass. Number
good
two,
rule.
And this is a really important one, is don't push things up past the sphincter if you're putting something up in your bum. So the moment you push it past the hole, it basically, the body starts to lubricate it naturally and it just keeps going upwards. And once it gets past the curve of your coccyx or your tailbone, it's really, really hard for it to come back out again. So the moment it's gone past there, that's, yeah, predominantly when people come in with stuff up their bum.
Point of no return.
Yeah, it literally is. And, you know, we're the ones who have to try and get it out at that point. And usually once it's gone past that point, it's actually hard for us to even do it in the ER. We often need to send them to the operating theatre to do it in
so
there.
It's sort of like a tong situation.
No, not at all. No. And then I think that's one of the big misconceptions is that, be able to go into ER, they'll just, you know, have some long tong that they can sort of pull things out.
No.
And it actually doesn't work that way because once it's past that curve, you can't re-straighten it very easily at all.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, how horrific.
One of those ones would be if something's definitely gone up past the sphincter and you can't get it out. You know, you've used your fingers and you can't get out with that, do not try and use anything else yourself to try and get it out. So don't use any tongs of your own. Don't try and get some pliers. Don't try and get a fork.
Because I can imagine in the panic, you would just be trying everything available that isn't having to tell another human that this is happening to you.
And then, one of the problems is that, say, for example, you do use something else, you end up perforating your bowel, you might end up with a colostomy bag. So it's you know, there is quite serious consequences to that. So definitely come and see us if it's gone up and you just can't do it. One of the other things is with cock rings. I just thought I wanted to bring that one up.
Mm-hmm.
So with the cock rings, usually they're made out of silicone, rubber or plastic. So with those, if you've left it on too long, it can be actually really quite difficult to get it off again.
Because of all the blood swelling.
Exactly. Yeah.
The penis.
Oh. And in particular, I'm not a big fan of this, but you can still actually buy metal cock rings. And, look, they might look great if you're into that thing. But if you think about it, you know, it's a lot easier for us to cut off a silicone or a rubber, cock ring that's been on for a while. But if you come in with a metal ring,
the bandsaw.
That ain't coming off easy. And some of them are really, really thick. And
you have to cut through it.
Well, this is the thing. We've got a thing called a ring cutter, which is like, say, for example, if you fracture your finger and it's all swollen and you can't get your wedding band off and we can grind it off. It's like a little circular saw. But with these metal cock rings, or in one case that we had, it was a bit of tractor machinery that was 8 millimetres thick and solid cast iron.
Wow.
We actually don't have anything easily that we can cut through it with, so we actually have to call the fire brigade in because they've got angle grinders.
I have heard about this.
No.
Because, they've got angle grinders, and angle grinders are the only thing that's actually going to get through something that thick and hard. And the irony of all that is that when you call the fire brigade to do something like that, they can't just send out one bloke with an angle grinder. They have to send a full truck and the team.
Oh, my God.
So, the whole troop comes in and,
angle grinder?
So the actual firemen will actually do it, but obviously with supervision from the surgeons. And it actually has to be done under cold water.
High pressure kick.
Because if you think about it, metal on metal, it grinds and it increases heat because of the friction. So you actually need to do it under cold water to not burn the penis at the same time.
Wow. This is turning into that scene from There's Something About Mary where there's like everyone gathered around this poor soul.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, so definitely steer clear of that. And there's probably one other big one to come in for, and that's if you've overdosed, unintentionally on Viagra or Cialis. Mm-hmm. So if you sort of thought, one tablet's not doing enough, you've taken another one or another one, and then you can't get your erection down again. Initially it's all going to be all well and fun for the first, however many hours, but then 14 hours, 18 hours down the track.
Exhausting.
That is not fun.
Oh, my God.
And literally the only way to settle that down is for us to actually, under local anaesthetic, stick needles into the penis and drain the blood out.
Oh, my God.
And that's the only way to actually recover it. That's definitely one for people to come in. And also severe, the penis fractures. So when it's actually bent out of shape quite badly, there's a lot of severe bruising. It's definitely worth getting it checked out by us because you can end up with long-term complications with scarring, damage to what we call the urethra, which is the tube you actually pee out of, and can end up with, all sorts of dramas down the track, like needing catheters and whatnot.
So then you have to put, the penis in, a cast or a sling?
No, no.
No? It doesn't have crutches?
No. Basically, because a fractured penis, there's no actual bone that's actually broken. It's actually a sheath that is around the muscle in there that's actually snapped, and then the blood has leaked out, and that's what causes the break. So you need to just sew that back up again and evacuate the blood that's leaked out.
Evacuate the blood.
Meg, thank you so much for calling the hookup. You were having phone sex with your boyfriend and you lost a part of your electric toothbrush.
I did. So my mind was kind of like, let's use a toothbrush in the midst of really hot adolescent phone sex passion, and something starts feeling a bit weird. And I notice half the end of the electric toothbrush is gone.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Electric toothbrushes, they have an attachable head on the top. Did you think that you were meant to put the head of the toothbrush inside of the vaginal canal?
No, it was it wasn't a proper, rechargeable toothbrush. It was looked like a manual toothbrush.
Yeah.
But it had batteries in it, and it had a weird vibrate setting to it. Tongue plug.
Yep.
So it was one of those. And so the bit at the bottom came off, and that was what got stuck inside.
So the battery.
Yeah. So about 1:30 in the morning, freaking out, and had to go wake my dad up.
This
happened. I need to be taken to the ER.
No, Meg. No. Yep. Okay, if that was me, I would still have the battery in my vagina.
look, it was all right because me and my dad have always had a pretty open relationship from that point onwards. It's been
a bonding experience.
Open.
Yeah.
And so this was the Saturday night of the Canberra Day long weekend at about 2:00 in the, emergency room. It was so busy. We're waiting ages, and I just remember the look on the nurse who kind of did the whole, is it an illness or injury that brings you here, as she's trying so hard to stay composed and professional as I'm telling her what's going on, and I'm like, hun, just laugh. It's a funny thing. I'm laughing about it as well through my shame. Yeah. It's okay.
You were completely charged up.
Yeah, I was like, I'm here now. It's all good. So after waiting for about 4 to 6 hours. So a nurse rushes out and she's like, we've just realized you could have toxic shock. So a couple of nurses tried to get it out and wasn't happening. So they needed to take it out surgically. Yep. So in surgery I went and, that all got sorted. And I eventually got home on the Monday morning after spending 36 hours in hospital with my dad for a vaginal related injury.
Oh my God, Meg. You're an absolute hero for retelling that story, by the way. Thank you so much. Now, John, have you seen an electric toothbrush up the vagina before? Is this something that you've come across?
Not in the vagina. And the thing about a vagina is that usually you can get it out pretty easily because it's essentially a blind ending tube. So the same goes for, lost condoms and stuff like that as well. So if you lose something up a vagina, chances are you're going to be able to find it again yourself without too much dramas. And
I'm sick of losing things up vaginas.
Yeah, it just happens all the time.
Throw my keys.
Damn it. One tip is that if you're having trouble, say, for example, you lose a condom up there, there. One tip is to actually wait about half an hour after sex, and the vagina actually, during sex, actually lengthens, so it makes it harder to get. But after you finish sex and it's about half an hour later, it actually shrinks back to its normal size and it's a lot easier
to
put your finger back
up
there and get it. Yeah.
Every day I'm fascinated by it. Every day I'm just fascinated by something new that my vagina can do.
It's like a transformer.
It is. I'm joined by comedian and co-host of Swipe Night podcast, comedian Rose Callahan. Thanks so much for joining The Hookup.
Thank you for having me, Hannah.
Share with us what you reckon your, I don't know, personal favourite sex incident story is.
Me and my first boyfriend, when I was 18, right, we both were still living at home, so we had to improvise. So where he lived, there was a beautiful lookout point there, so we used to go there and have sex in his VL Calais. Which is lovely, just lovely. And I remember, like, one time we did that, and then the next day, like, he was coming to my house and he had to drive my mum somewhere, and we just didn't know where the condom was. Like, it sort of vanished, and we were like, oh, God. And so we're just picturing, like, my mum getting in the car and then just, like, a condom dropping off the roof or, of the car, or just, like, dangling on the rearview mirror. And we just,
on
like...
the dash.
Yeah, just sitting there, and just that would be the worst thing in the world. And then so we just like turned the whole car upside down, searched everywhere, and then we just kind of had to give up and go, oh, well. And, she didn't find a condom or anything. It was fine. I was like, I don't know. Well, I don't know what happened to that until 2 days later when I went to the toilet. The condom revealed itself. It came out of me. So that's where I'd been hiding that whole time.
Oh, no.
Which is why. And that's not the first time that's happened to me either. And I feel like it's something, it's a thing. That's a thing that happens to people.
Taylor, thank you so much for calling The Hookup. Now, you lost a condom during a one-night stand and the doctor found it the next day?
Yes. I had a one-night stand with this guy. I was pretty drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And after sex, there was no, like, he didn't say anything to me. It all seemed to go, like, perfectly fine. And I went for my first ever pap smear the next day. And so I was, of course, hungover getting my first pap smear.
Oh, you poor thing.
Goes, oh, what's this? And she pulls it out, like, while I'm on the table.
Oh, my God. What did you say?
I was just in shock. This was like my family GP. I was just like, and then my immediate reaction was like, if a parent had found out that I was having sex, like, it was just like, well, I was trying to be safe. And
I'm joined by comedian Rose Callahan and also Dean Beck. You might know him from Joy, Melbourne's LGBTIQ community radio station. Now, Dean runs a Lend a Hand workshop sponsored by the Victorian AIDS Council and Living Positive Victoria. He's been doing it for 12 years and recently gained this sponsorship in recognition of growing community needs. Hey, Dean, thank you so much for joining The Hookup. It's a pleasure to have you.
Great to be with you, Hannah.
Now, Dean... You work with your hands, but you're not a sculptor or a builder. How would you describe what it is that you do in your workshop?
Well, it's a seminar, not a workshop, so it's not a it's not a demonstration. But we go through lots of things regarding anal pleasure.
This seminar is within the context of talking about anal fisting.
It is.
Why does this workshop, the seminar, exist?
It exists because so many people are into it. It exists because there is very, very little information of any value available. And it was one of the things that I was lucky enough to have two guys in my life that were over the years kind of like, I guess, sexual mentors to me, who really took time to educate me. And, you know, I thought... I should pass on that knowledge to others. I went to a workshop once where there were two guys who taught the workshop who had done it, but they had not, it wasn't their thing, it wasn't their passion, it wasn't what gets them off. So I made a bit of a complaint after that and said, you know, you really need to get someone on who it's their thing.
It shouldn't be a university lecture.
And the person at the time said, well, why don't you run the course? And so I've done it ever since.
Dean, I was actually really surprised when I read some material on your class and found out that fisting was actually nothing like what I had imagined. What are the biggest misconceptions about the practice?
I wondered what you would imagine, firstly. but one of the biggest misconceptions is that you're going to end up having to wear a colostomy bag for the rest of your life. Sadly, it's depicted often in pornography as being very physical and aggressive, and it's not at all. It's probably the most intimate connection that you can have with another human being. With guys, though, the thing is that it's totally non-genital, and guys and sex don't connect with how can you have sex without genitals. So that's sometimes a difficult thing to try and communicate, that you can have the most intense sexual experience of your life without genitals.
Why is it that anal fisting is people connect it with gay men, and then vaginal fisting is more connected with lesbian women?
Well, traditionally, yes, but there are more and more straight men into anal fisting. And in fact, I did a workshop with 120 straight people, 80% of which were women, who all wanted to know about how to fist their male partners.
When can it go wrong? Can you, like, slip on the top that you've laid down, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you can, yeah. I mean, the lubes used for fisting are extremely slippery. So if
and I'm sure there's a lot of it around.
And there is a lot of it around. You're quite right. So you can do that. But the purpose of my seminars is so that people don't have accidents. But there are 17 or 18 cases reported by St. Vincent's Hospital in Sydney each and every year, which involve a rupture of the colon. And those accidents are usually brought about by guys who are, you know, off their face on drugs, as well as being highly aggressive and not being aware of their bodies. And that can mean 6 to 9 months in hospital. It can mean 3 to 6 operations. You'll end up with a scar from your mid-chest to your groin. And they're never successful. I mean, they're never... You can't pull out your intestines and put them back in the way they were naturally evolved without losing some of it.
What is the typical demographic for the fister, Dean? Is there a specific kind of person?
Well, to my workshops, I get everyone from 18 to 65 plus coming along to my workshops. Quite a lot of couples come along. And there is these days, I think... you know, less and less stigma associated with it. There are still some, but that stigma forces people not to talk about it, and therefore they make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you seen that demographic change over the years that you've been running these courses?
I probably see more younger people than, like under, say, 30, than when I first started out. But... yeah, look, the classes are always booked out in advance. They're always full, and there's always a new bunch ready to find out more about fisting.
Now, when it comes to anal fisting, how important is communication and trust? Because as you were saying before, it's an incredibly intimate thing.
Interesting you mentioned the word trust. The first book ever written on gay men and anal fisting was titled Trust.
Oh.
And communication is key. It is all about the connection. And there are like what I call the three C's that are the essential elements to fisting. There's communication, clipped fingernails, and Crisco, which is a special sort of lube.
Oh, really? Now, one misconception that I had about fisting before was that it was actually involving a closed fist, which is... Not the case.
No, the reason why gay men can't fight is because they call a fist an open hand. it's all in the wrist, actually.
Like so many good sports.
Maybe it's why gay men have limp wrists. But you need to have a soft hand and a relaxed wrist for the hand to go where it needs to go. If it's all stiff and rock hard, then it won't go anywhere.
And I believe that hand technique that you're speaking of is called the duck bill. Is that right?
You have been doing your homework.
Yes.
Well done. Very good.
I just wanted to impress you with my fisting.
Yeah, I am impressed.
So, yeah, if you imagine doing a shadow puppet that looks like a duck, you're one step and the many steps away from being able to fist somebody, right?
Sure. Your hand straight out and your thumb tucked in. The other elements are the four Ps: position, placement, posture, and patience.
How exactly do you prepare for all of these things?
Ah, well, that's called douching, and that's the clean out, which can take me up to an hour. It can take sometimes longer.
Up to an hour?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there
is no spontaneity associated with doing this right.
Wow. So do you have a little ritual going? Do you maybe put on
pretty
some
much.
Enya?
Enya
for an enema, right?
Yeah. Perfect. That or deep forest. Traditionally, the bottom would set up the play environment and the top would do the cleaning up. But,
so I should specify that the bottom is going to be the one who is being fisted. The top is doing the fisting.
The fistee, shall we call
the
them.
Fistee, yes.
Yeah, the top is the fister. But I talk about, in my class, I talk about two different styles of fisting. There's the force method, which I do not prescribe to and I think is dangerous. Mm. And then there's the invitation method, which is the method that I prescribe to and that I teach. And that is all about the bottom inviting the top in rather than there being any force involved. And in that space, there's no damage to be done.
It's interesting that you talk about the force method method and the invitational method, and I think that is maybe where a lot of the misconceptions about fisting in general come from, that it is a kind of aggressive or violent thing. And I believe that fisting in pornography is illegal in Australia according
Certainly
to censorship
is, yep.
laws.
Yep.
Now, why do you think that is?
Because we have an archaic censorship system which makes all fetishes illegal and refuse classification.
Yeah, I was actually quite intrigued when I read those classification laws that they include things such as bondage and hot wax. Like
they include people wearing a nappy.
Yeah, things that I thought were not necessarily so taboo nowadays that are actually, you know, verboten in Australian pornography.
Dressing up as a schoolgirl is illegal in pornography in
wow.
Australia.
Wow. Dean Beck, thank you so much for joining us. Hope everything goes well for all your workshops in the future and all the great work that you're doing for the Fisters of Australia.
Thank you so much.
The show about love and f***ing. The Hookup with Hannah Riley on Triple J.